Hi, everyone, and welcome to Palestine Exists, a space where we deep dive into all things Palestine, from history and politics to culture, resistance, and the stories that deserve to be told. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by the headlines, frustrated by misinformation, or just eager to learn more about Palestine beyond the mainstream narrative, this is the place for you. As always, I'm Petra, and we have Hiba. Hi, Habuba.
Hi, Petura.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good, you know.
So, are you feeling better? I know you were a little sick.
Yeah, but this sickness, bro, like, it's not going away. Man, I don't know.
You have to go get it checked.
But inshallah.
Before we start our very, very serious episode topic, I need to know your official position on something that's, like, very, very serious. Like, I need your, like, 100%, like, you know, comprehension and, like, you know, attention right now, okay?
It's very serious.
Okay. Can 100 average men beat 1 average gorilla in a fight? No weapons?
Okay, so before I answer, I do need to know, are these men coordinated or are they operating like the UN?
Oh my God. Listen. No, for real. If they were operating like the UN, 60 of them would spend the whole fight debating whether the gorilla has the right to self-defense.
Oh my God, Hiba. Yeah, and the gorilla would have beat the fuck out of them, actually. Ooh,
bro, 100 men versus therapy, bro. Yeah. Like, that's what y'all need to be fucking fighting about, like, talking about on the internet.
Yes, please, literally. Do that.
Okay. So, all right, so let's begin. All right, I'm going to explain a feeling maybe that is probably a little too familiar with all of us, right? You get tired in ways that don't make sense to anyone outside of it. Not just physically, not just emotionally, but like existentially, like in your bones. You're still showing up, you're still posting, you're still speaking when asked, but everything feels like it takes like twice as much effort for half as much meaning. You start to feel detached from your words, like you say things that you mean, but you don't really feel them anymore. You read a headline and you don't really react. You see a video and the grief is immediate. You cry, you probably feel sad, but like there's no outrage. Instead, you feel guilt. And you feel guilty for not feeling enough or for not doing enough or you feel guilty for knowing that someone is dying while you scroll past because you couldn't take one more thing today. And at the same time, you're always doing too much. You're too loud. You're too aggressive. You're too obsessive. You're too emotional. You're too online. You're too radical. And then you start to wonder if there's like a version of yourself that maybe maybe shouldn't be punished, right? Then you realize there isn't. That's what we call burnout.
Yeah.
And burnout isn't just being tired. It's about being systemically drained. You're intellectually, emotionally, political, and it's any you're drained by structures that don't want to kill your voice outright. They just want it to become so difficult to use your voice that you eventually stop trying. And burnout is what sets in when you have to keep justifying your existence to people who don't actually want you in the room. When every act of advocacy risks your professional, educational, academic, or consequences, emotional collapse, or both of these. And the worst part is that the collapse gets used against you and you're no longer considered an advocate. You become unstable and your exhaustion becomes evidence that your politics were incoherent or, you know, like false from the start. I know this is kind of a different intro, but this episode isn't about how to feel better. It's not about recovery. It's about recognition. It's about how burnout in the context of Palestinian resistance and political organizing more broadly is not just something that happens. It's something that's built, encouraged, weaponized. It's how institutions manage resistance without ever saying that they're repressing it. And it's how collapse becomes a strategy. So Yeah, let's start.
I mean, applause yet again for my baby Hiba, because you ate with that. And as advocates, we've seen it. We've talked about it. We've discussed it, like, privately, me and Hiba. We'd say, like, I'd call her and I'm like, I'm so freaking done. I don't know what more to do. Another baby is beheaded. Another man got arrested. Another mom lost her child. And we see this every day. And we continue yelling. We continue protesting. We continue, you know, working with the system specifically. And the system just gives us a big fat middle finger. And we're getting defeated, right? Mm-hmm. I personally am. It feels like if you boycott, it's not enough because everything is owned by a Zionist organization. If you're protesting specifically in America now, you might get deported. You're going to get jailed. You might lose your job. The system in itself is like actively working to silence us. And that's just a top layer through all of this fatigue, through all of this advocacy fatigue. And so our enemy seems so much bigger, even though we outnumber them. We truly do. With that, it just, everyone is like against us. Everything is against us. And it's not to victimize, obviously, the advocates or the people working on the ground, because we see Gaza. But it's just something that I feel like 2 years into a genocide, a failed ceasefire, we see Bisan and we see all of these Gazans, Palestinians and Gazas, videos, and them literally saying, you know, at this point, just nuke us. We're done. And we take it upon ourselves to feel guilty because it's always, I could have done better. I could have yelled louder at a protest. I could have called more numbers. And so that's, you know, the topic for today. Hiba, why do you think, like, Palestinian advocacy in itself, like, triggers unique fatigueness? And why do you, like, I personally feel like every other advocacy, yeah, it takes time, but at that, like, you can see the light, you know, and under the tunnels. Sorry, dark humor. See light under- We have to, like, that's how I deal with my fatigue or burnout. But, you know, like, you see it. To me, I don't, like, and not for Gaza. I do think the genocide in Gaza is gonna end, inshallah, sooner than later, but it's like what comes after, right?
Yeah,
like,
the genocide comes after.
Yeah, and then our goal isn't just to end the genocide, it's a liberation. So why do you think it's this Palestinian advocacy triggers unique fatigueness within us?
Okay, so first of all, that's a freaking amazing question, Petra.
Love you, Hiba.
I love you. Okay, so I think, okay, so my answer is gonna be so, like, multifaceted, right? So okay, so
please,
first,
I love multifaceted, Hiba.
Girl, okay. So I think first it's like, because it's not just that we're watching atrocities happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's that we're watching them happen again and again, mm-hmm, and again, and the world reacts every time like it's new, even though it's not, and we respond like it's new, even though we already know how it ends.
Oh yeah.
And that kind of exhaustion, it settles in deep. It's the kind that makes you feel like you're living in a rerun, except this time you're the one that's like narrating it for the crowd. You have to walk them through the images and the deaths and the maps, you know, the 1948 map, the 1967 map, and you know what I'm talking about. And you're the one that has to sit there and you have to plead for recognition, like it hasn't already been given to you and then revoked 100 times before, right? It's not emotional labor. It's like we're literally being re-traumatized, and it's being framed as like political responsibility on our behalf, basically, right? Yeah. And we're watching children being pulled out of rubble, and then simultaneously explaining to someone on a panel why the word apartheid isn't a metaphor.
Yes. Oh, right? Just a buzzword. You're using all these buzzwords, Hiba.
Yeah. you're fundraising for displaced families, you're fundraising for tents, you're fundraising for people to get out of Gaza, while being told you should stay neutral. And like, you're being asked for your quote-unquote opinion on a genocide that already has numbers, photos, coordinates, receipts, articles, papers, like investigative journalists on it, right? And then somehow on top of all of that, you still feel like you're not doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exhaustion. It's not grief, but it's like you're performing. It's like a spectacle, right? It's like you're performing grief. And that's like the only way you'll be legitimized into the conversation, right?
Yeah.
And like, and now here's like the double take of it, right? And I'm sorry I'm yapping. It's such a long-winded answer.
I love it.
But it's made worse by how the Palestinian political identity has been, like, basically it's been forced to emerge from loss, right?
Mm-hmm.
The foundational story of our nationalism is not statehood. It's like, it's rupture, right? We're not a nation, a quote-unquote nation that's been born out of victory the same Israchara was, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're people that have been stitched together by dispossession. Our nationalism, like, started off as defeat, right? We mark our collective existence, either in the diaspora or in Palestine, whether it be Palestine, you know, 48 or West Bank or Gaza, or in the camps in the Middle East, or just diaspora, right? We mark our collective existence through catastrophe, through Nakba, through exile, through every checkpoint and prison sentence and massacre that followed. And because of that, I think Palestinian advocacy never gets to start from wholeness, from us having it, right? We've always attempted or tried to rebuild what's already been taken. We do it in language, right? With the stories that our parents or our grandparents, like, you know, like,
told us,
right? We do it in memory, in photos, in visibility. We do it in every protest, in every statement, in every viral post. And all of these are not an attempt not just to resist, but it's to restore something. It's to restore a history or a dignity, or restore like basically a future for us. And the longer that you do it, and the longer that you're engaging in this loop, basically, the more that future feels like it's theoretical, right? Like, there was a time where you and I would talk about how we would see Palestine freed in our lifetime, and now we're like, maybe one day, right? Like, we're not so sure about it anymore, because nothing changes, because they're bulldozing the same houses that we're rebuilding. Right? We say we will rebuild, and then they bulldoze those houses again, and they drop bombs on the same neighborhoods, and then you find yourself screaming new names over the same ruins.
Oh. Goosebumps.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like our trauma becomes like a public utility, right? Like, basically, like something that like people can consume our trauma, and they can dissect our trauma, they can pity our trauma, and then they forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We always say this, like, people are screaming about Gaza for now, but who's gonna help us rebuild? Us, not anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, right? We have our two allies, love y'all, but like, sorry. But
oh,
like,
my God.
I don't know. I just, it's not burnout. I think, at least for the Palestinian experience, or like the Levant, maybe the Levant experience, and knowing exactly what the world will say and what it won't.
Mm.
Right? And you know that, like, it's so disenfranchising, and it's so fucking like fucked up. That's it. Because like, we know that the truth isn't enough. We know the numbers aren't enough. We know that no matter how many times they hear our men, our women, our children screaming, or us screaming and crying, that it doesn't move them, unless you make it poetic, unless you make it really pretty, right? I don't know. And when you finally can't do it anymore, and your body shuts down and your mind goes to blank, like they call it fatigue, and they call it burnout, and it's as if it's incidental, as if that's not the entire fucking point of the system.
It's engineered. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
And
now I want you to answer that question. Basically, why do you think Palestinian advocacy triggers this unique fatigueness? in the world or in us. I answered it at least for the Palestinian Levant experience. Why? You can answer it for however you see fit.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the way you answered it, because I do believe it's defeatism and trauma. It's generational trauma too, right? So we have our own trauma where we go to school and then when they're like, oh, where are you from? Palestine. Oh, Pakistan? What is that? You know, like we've all, I don't care if you're a Palestinian living in America.
Oh, you mean Israel?
You mean Israel? I visited there once with my family. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, like we have always...
Kanafa?
Oh, I love falafel and hummus. Like they make the best in Israel.
So fucking corny.
Yeah, but yes. And every single Palestinian...
We have to sit there and smile through it.
Yes. And every single person who's Palestinian and diaspora who, you know, was actively talking about Palestine, you would get shut down. And again and again and again, you would have to explain it. Like, no, it's not Israel. This is what actually happened. This is my grandma's story. This is my grandpa's story. They told it to me. We've seen it. Oh, do you know about Muhammad al-Durra? Oh, do you know about this? Like, and they're like, no, thank you, bye. Like, it's that. And it's the generational struggle, the generational trauma within us. And we do not see a win in sight. And yeah, I specifically talk about Palestinians because I'm a Palestinian and I've just been feeling blah and defeated. So that's my experience. And it's because it is engineered, right? When you look, we always mention like the Ukraine and Russia war. When you look at that, right, they're like, oh, there's a clear victim and it's Ukraine. There's a clear enemy and it's Russia. And everyone helps them. A hospital in Ukraine gets bombed and this is a crime. This is a war crime. This is horrible. We need to stop Russia. Russia bad. You know, and the whole war, Russia got cut from the Olympics, from the Eurovision or whatever it's called, all of this. But when Israel is doing the same thing for the past 76 years, I'm not educated enough.
Right.
Israel has a right to defend themselves. And you're always stuck in the cycle where you have to repeat your history, right? And it's as Palestinians as well, like we love talking about Palestine. Like the ongoing meme on TikTok is, how did you know I'm Palestinian? And you're dripped in like your Palestinian necklace and all of that. Because we do. We love talking about it. I feel like it's part of our resistance. But it gets exhausting when, you know, someone, you're at a doctor's office and it's like, oh, you're Arab. Where are you from? Palestine. And they have this like scared,
chilling,
shocked face.
Yeah, like a chilling, like a guilty.
You know what I'm talking about.
Who are you?
They don't know how to respond and you don't know how they're going to respond. Are they against me? Are they with me? And they're like,
I
hear what's happening.
People.
I'm sorry. I hope there's a two-state solution and peace on that land. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and you, like, should you argue with them? Should you not? You know?
Yeah.
And I want to talk about how, like, the engineering of it all, right?
Right.
Like, the peace process, right? It's Oslo Accords promised us statehood. It delivered apartheid and checkpoints. Negotiations for Israel became a tool to delay everything, to put the Palestinians on the side, for Israel to come out and be like, oh, look how cute we are. We made peace with the Arabs. We're just negotiating. Like, we need a bit more time. But all while Israel is building more settlements. And we see it in Gaza, right? We're constantly working on a ceasefire, Kamala Harris and Biden. Oh, we're working along around the clock. And then boom, we get the news report that, that was all a lie. The Biden administration never even talked about a ceasefire. And like the Israeli people, specifically the president, I think his name is Herzog, was like happy about it. He was like, we're glad that it was the Biden administration during all of this, because we were able to do whatever. And then you get lied to and they push it. It just, like, you don't know what is fact, what is not, even as a Palestinian. And you're screaming at the top of your lung. You're saying all of this. You're trying to explain to people why they should care, why they should be human enough to care about Palestine. And then on, and they're like, too busy. Like, yeah, I'm sorry. That's the Middle East, whatever. But then they have the Ukraine flag.
It's like we're expected in their to bio. Suffer. We're expected yes. to suffer.
Yes, we're expected to suffer. It's the Middle East. There's always war there. And then in the same breath, they have the Ukraine flag and they're going to protest about like feminism and feminist rights. And it's like, that is all interconnected with Palestine. You can't stand for feminism in America and start screaming like free the nipple. So sorry. Right? While Palestinian women in Gaza can't, like, they don't have pads. They aren't able to give birth. They are having miscarriages. They aren't able to
literally use the restroom because yes. of the fact that they're sharing, like, bedrooms with men that are, like, family, but they cannot unveil in front of them.
Exactly.
And they have then, to hold their, they have, they're getting UTIs at a disproportionate rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you like it's the cycle of, oh, you meet a new person, you start talking about Palestine. They're like, oh, I don't know. And you start discussing it with them and you have to go from all the way back. And then you end here and they're like, but yeah, like October 7th shouldn't have happened. So I'm going to stay silent. And then you try to meet them halfway. Like, what do you care about? The environment. Oh, well, did you know the like tons and tons and tons of missiles that Israel dropped on Gaza is ruining the environment? Yeah, that's really sad. But like we have Tesla trucks now that are electric and that's helping. Woo. And it's like you can't ever win. Even with some of these like allies, you know, who don't really care, who just like putting a Hiva calls them the batijas, the little watermelon in their thing.
The people who call. You know what? Oh, my God. I have a story. OK, so the other day, someone like one of these like commies that I'm mutuals with. Mm-hmm. El commies. Sorry, not alcoholics, don't come for me, y'all. But he posted like this thing where he's critiquing this like liberal about their inability to call Palestine, and I quote, a G-side.
Okay.
And I commented, I'm like, isn't it ironic that that in this video you're refusing to call it a genocide? You literally refer to it as a G-side. And mm-hmm. you didn't say Palestine. You put a fucking watermelon emoji instead of our flag. Like, you're literally mm-hmm. engaging in the act of erasing us. Mm-hmm. And people are like, oh, the watermelon people. What the fuck is a watermelon people? Bro, we're Palestinian.
We don't want to, like, get demonetized on TikTok. Oh, yeah. And this is like, how we push shadow it banned. Through fucking the get algorithm. Shadow banned,
bro. It's stop. Mm. You guys need to stop referring to Palestinians as the watermelon people. People are forgetting what fucking Palestine is, and you're doing Israel's job for them.
And honestly and truly, I feel like personally where I got to like this defeatism burnout was when, because I'm in America, right? In America, everyone was on board. When it first happened, it was instant, right? Like so many people like I've never saw before finally speaking up about Palestine. We see celebrities, Andrew Garfield, Kalani, every like Macklemore, and so many people out on the streets, so many mm-hmm. posts. We were flooding it all. And everyone, right? And this might, you know, hurt a few people, but I don't care at this point. Everyone's like, fuck genocide Joe, fuck you, we're not voting Democrat, this is where we end it. And then the light switch happened where it's like, oh, but like Harris is now, so you don't be a, you know, one issue voter, you can't do that, like it doesn't, we need to worry about us. And it's like, bro, we were all on the same page a week ago, what switched? And I feel like that's when personally me, I was like, yeah, no, I thought people cared, but they obviously don't. And yep. I get it, you know, oh, they're a million miles away. If I'm being affected right now, or I will be affected, you know, in these 4 years, I'd rather save my ass than protect these other people, which I get. That's like the human instinct. But you were also yelling, fuck genocide Joe, fuck the Democrats, what happened? And to me, that's when it started. I don't yeah. know.
I mean, I think it was getting in before that. I think it was a little bit before that too. But I think that we see that, like, for example, like burnout doesn't appear out of nowhere, right? Mm. It's not like a personal breaking point because, I mean, there's obviously personal breaking points, but it's a political outcome most of all, right? It's built, maintained, and managed by the institutions that claim to platform you, right? And it obviously, it's not accidental. It's procedural, right? Palestinian advocates don't burn out because they're doing too much. They burn out because every site of so-called engagement is structured to take energy from us while limiting our impact. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And like,
yeah.
For example, like this is it, this is how fatigue, right, becomes governance, right? It does it through policies that delay, that soften. They do it through language that demands balance but never justice, through a like basically through a politics of performance that expects you to narrate genocide, like it's scheduling, like, you know, like business meetings, right? And you see this in like, here's a clear example, fucking how it came out this week that Biden lied to everyone. The entire
Biden administration.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how they said for the last literally 18 months, well, whatever, maybe 16, 15 months, because Trump is now president.
Yeah. Can I just state that, like, this is gonna, I don't care anymore. They never talked about a ceasefire until Kamala Harris was running. And that's when the, like, talk of, well, yeah, like, Biden never asked for a ceasefire, but Kamala Harris is everywhere saying she's working on a ceasefire around the clock.
But yeah, I know. They did it to basically, like, manipulate us. To emotionally, like manipulate us. But here's the thing. They lied. And, like, shocker. I feel like we knew that deep down. We knew
shocker.
That.
But I'm talking, like, Hiba.
Yeah, right, girl. I hope you know, I hope the not talking, you know, hope she heard that, because a lot of people spoke on election day. That's all I'm gonna say. But you even, like, see it even post-election, right? Even when he was still, like, when they lost, they came out and they're like, yeah, actually, you remember when we, like, threatened Israel that they had 30 days to deliver humanitarian aid? And then, like, you know, or else we won't send them weapons. Like, that was kind of a lie. Sorry. Like, we just lied to you guys.
Rafah has a red line. Is a red line. We will not be sending our MK400s or whatever the F they're called.
We're girls. Don't expect us to know what fucking weapons are. Ew. That's a man's job.
Yeah. It's a red line. Boom. Everyone in America is worried about Super Bowl Sunday. And then they did the most atrocious hit on Rafah, and then guess what? Oh, well, we couldn't stop them, so we're just gonna give them more weapons. Okay. Yep.
And like the same thing, like, and it's just like, I don't understand. And then you have people still supporting and backing the like these liberals or the Democratic Party as if they're not, like, hello. And, like, watch, Petra, and like this week, you know, after this news is coming out, people are going to come out and be like, fuck you guys. Fuck every single Democrat that wanted to make us feel guilty for, like, oh, we should have voted for her because she was working on a ceasefire. And how does it feel? Like, she was lying to our faces the entire time. Now, are you guys going to still blame us? And they still are. And they're still going to make us feel like shit.
They will say, even though, like, she lied about that.
But look at what Trump is doing to your people.
You guys cared more about what's happening overseas, as if, you know, America isn't complicit and has every part in what happens overseas. But I digress. They'll say, you could have looked out for us, you could have helped us here, you could have helped yourselves. Like, I've seen it on TikTok where these people are coming out and saying, Mahmoud is now in ICE detention, you did it to yourself. If only you voted Kamala. If we voted Kamala, right, there would have probably never been that phony ceasefire, and they would have still been bombed. Thank you. So Apple, like, apples and oranges, they're both the same thing. But Trump tells us, like, and I'm not a Trump supporter, I hate Republicans, but he's not lying. He's saying, oh, I'm gonna do 1, 2, 3. Like, we know we're not gonna be blindsided by him, whereas the Democrats, they feed us all of this and they're like, we're helping, we're trying, and they're lying the whole time. Also, let's not forget, during the, like, Washington DC protest, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden said these are terrorist protests and we need to figure out if we have terrorists who are illegals here and they need to be deported. So you said the same thing. Like, God knows what you would have done with all of this. We both know you're paid, Republicans and Democrats are paid through the same people who are complicit and who are doing what they are doing overseas. And then it's the topic of out of sight, out of mind, right? And I hate it because we're guilty of it too as Palestinians. When we turn off our phone, sadly, we're no longer living in it. Like we do have that, the comfort of turning off my phone. I don't need to see this picture, blah, blah, blah. And you get to live. And so these Americans who aren't Palestinian do that. And they're like, well, I mean, just turn off your phone. Like, come on. And then the infighting happens, and then you feel like, oh, we have no solidarity, we are so disorganized, they're more organized than us, da, da, da. And it fuels the fatigue, the advocacy fatigue, it fuels your burnout, it fuels your defeatism. And it's like, if we can't even, you know, work together, how are we gonna dismantle Zionism? And so it's just an ever, like, it's always a loop, always something. It's a loop. Yeah, it's, I mean, sorry, that was like a long gap.
No, you ate because like it's like well needed, and it's like extremely important when we're having these types of like conversations, right? I think I want to talk about how this is like basically how it's like, as you said earlier, like engineering is such a good word for it, right? Because it's genuinely, it's burnout by design, right? So I think, like, I first want to talk about how when, like, there's a difference between burning out and being burned through, right? Ooh, Palestinian advocacy doesn't just collapse because it's exhausting. It collapses because it's made to run on fuel that it can't afford to produce. Translation, performance, containment, and, like, making sure you're emotionally mature enough to, like, have these conversations, right? So you're not just told what you can say, you're told how you're supposed to feel while you're saying it, right?
Yeah.
So basically, you're allowed to grieve or speak your grief, but you're not allowed to rage. Or you're allowed to mourn, but you're not allowed to demand. Or you're allowed to care, but only in your tone and pacing and vocabulary of your oppressors, right? 100%. And when you don't fit, when your emotions deviate from like the norm or the standard deviation, your collapse, you're already being delegitimized by everyone. You're already being delegitimized, right? Not because you're fragile, but because like this space or like this world or the, I guess, I don't know, the space was never meant to hold your emotions or your rage, right? So one of the most quietly violent mechanisms of burnout is what psychologists call emotional dissonance, right? And basically what that is, it's the pain that comes from having to perform feelings that you don't actually feel or suppress the ones that you do. So in liberal activist spaces, especially ones that claim to include Palestinians, this shows up through emotional expectations that are by design, Petra, impossible to meet. So you're expected to grieve but not interrupt, you're allowed to speak but not indict, and you're given the mic but only if you use it to educate and to call for peace, not revolution, not destabilization, right? And so what ends up happening here is, and like this is backed by there's a paper, it's called Protected by the Emotions of the Group Burnout Study. And what ends up happening is that the Palestinian advocates in these spaces, they burn out faster than others. And it's not because they're less resilient, but because that they're being asked to stay emotionally, quote unquote, in sync with people whose politics require them to dilute their own.
That's right? Amazing.
And so we're required to show up as mourners, as people who already have buried their dead, who are sad, who are in mourning or in grief, right? But we're not allowed to show up as like subjects of anti-colonial wars, right? Like we're supposed, and like the emotional role that is given to us, the mourning, the grieving, the teaching, the hurting, the crying, it becomes the condition to be accepted in these groups. And if you rage, you're removed. If you're numb or feel like nothing or feel like opposite than like the quote unquote group, you're abandoned. And if you're asking for more, you become hated, right? And the burnout becomes a byproduct of injustice. So
Petra, like, I know I'm yapping a bit, right? But what
no,
this study
confirms... No, I love
confirms,
it. Yeah, 100%. I'm letting it sink in. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's okay, baby. So what the study confirms, and, like, what you already know, is that burnout isn't internal, right? Mm-hmm. It's interpersonal, it's institutional, and it's procedural, right? People survive systems when they feel emotionally mirrored, right? So when your grief is seen as valid and your rage is seen as appropriate and your urgency is like, oh shit, it is urgent. We know we need to act quickly and act now, right? Mm-hmm. This is when you survive a system. But when it comes to the Palestinians, Palestinian grief is never mirrored, and it's only tolerated and it's redirected, like, one way or the other. Like, oh, maybe focus on this instead, or maybe focus on that instead, right? They soften us, or they reframe it, or they kind of change the language, or,
oh,
right?
Israel is investigating it. Like, they've admitted right. that they did wrong, you know, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it's always, like, led as, like, a quote-unquote safe space conversation. But, and like, the end goal of that conversation is never to get clarity. It's never to, like, seek closure. It's for you to just remain calm and to not, like, crash out, right?
How many times, like, side note, how many times have you, as specifically a woman, right, when you're talking and you're, like, one of the least emotional people within a debate, have you heard, like, oh, Hiba, like, stop being emotional, even from allies, or they come and tell you, like, oh, I know, Hiba, this is very hard because it's your people. Let me, like, reword it so people can understand.
Yeah,
it.
Or like, oh no, what she's trying to say is this. Bitch, I'm right here. I can say what I'm trying to say perfectly fine. I'm extremely, extremely, like, capable of explaining my own ideologies and my own points. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, and it's like, oh, maybe tone it down so other people can understand, da-da-da-da, all of that, yeah.
Right, 100%. And, like, it's so frustrating, right? Because they want to go and, like, whitewash my own, like, thinking. As narrative. If I haven't already fucking, like, done that inherently enough, right? Like, as if I haven't, like, when I'm going through my own ideologies or I'm going through my own education, that I'm not already whitewashed myself, that I have to decolonize my own, like, mindset in order to, like, And also whitewash specific things that I'm talking about just so it could be phrased better or it could be, like, accepted better. As if I'm not doing it myself, we have these bitches that come in and want to do it for me. Fuck out of here, bro. Mm-hmm. So there's a study, right, that most institutions are, like, most institutions probably hope you don't ever read, right? And it's called Political Repression Motivates Anti-Government Violence, right? Its central finding is as blunt as it is damning, that, and it states that when people are denied the right to speak, to grieve, to demand, they stop asking. And when they stop asking, they either shut down entirely or escalate beyond the frame of acceptability. And in both cases, the institution says, look at how they behave. Look at what they've become. We were right to manage them, right? But they never ask, what did we build that made these the only two options of these people? And this is what Palestinians are forced to navigate constantly. You either collapse inside the system or you explode outside of it, right? So you either experience burnout or backlash. And the structure, it's ready for both, right? It's like that fork in the road. You either get two and the system is ready to accept both of those options, right? So if you burn out, you disappear. If you escalate, you're punished. If you do neither, you spend your life micromanaging yourself into, like, an emotional starvation, hoping that, like, you being a moderate or you being, like, a liberal will accept your longevity. Oh my God, mm-hmm. Can I say that?
Longevity.
Longevity. Into the, yeah, sorry.
There you go. Gold star, Hiba.
Stop. You know my praise thing. I love you.
I know. That's why I've been saying it all week.
You're so funny. When I was supposed to be, I was like going to sleep and you're like, gold star, Hiba. I was like, okay, girl, you got me blushing.
Actually, I'm going to make you a board and, like, actually buy gold stars and then, like, take a picture
I'll
of
fucking
it for
cry,
you.
Cry, bro. Like, you
I'm
know, like,
do
the,
it.
Or the red card and green card when you're in school.
Yes. Oh my God. Stop. Green okay, card sorry. Day for you.
Mm-hmm. But if I'm bad, like, I don't eat for, like, 2 days, like, earlier and
like Hiba.
You change it to, like, orange.
Yeah,
but
sorry,
it's okay. So anyways, so basically what I'm trying to say was that, like, no matter the fork in the road that you choose, the structure or the system or the institution or whatever, it wins because it controls the terms of how you react to the situation it put you in, right? So what this, like, the study shows, and we already know this, Petra, you and I, right? Mm-hmm. That, like, repression, when you're repressed, it creates tension and it doesn't go away, right? It builds. The same way how we say in Palestine, we build up, right? It builds mm-hmm. up. And when institutions suppress Palestinian clarity or rage or grief, they create, like, this accumulated pressure. And not everyone will handle that pressure the same way. And some people internalize it and they collapse and then they disappear from the movement, right? And then mm-hmm. some people resist it and they escalate it and they are seen as the radicals. And the moment they do, the institution frames them as extremists. They work with ICE to deport them. They, mm-hmm. People are unsafe around them. People label them as ungrateful for even being here in the first place. And the system isn't the aggressor anymore. It's the victim. Right? And they say, we tried to give them space, we tried to include them, but they were too angry, too aggressive, and too disruptive. And what this means structurally is that the burnout is just one mode of containment, right? So it's either burnout or radicalization. And the state, the university, the NGOs, the platforms, whatever the fuck whatever the medium is, it's built to punish both, either burnout or punishment. Or burnout or radicalization. Sorry, burnout or radicalization. That's it. And it's it's just so fucked, right? Because all this does is, and like I said, this is studied, you guys. Like, whatever, everything I'm, like, talking about is from a study that I cited in the beginning of, like, when I first started this rant, right?
I love that. I'm going to read that study, actually. Mm-hmm. I haven't read it.
This is where the political repression study, it matters, right? Because it proves what these institutions won't admit, that if you corner people long enough, they stop playing along to your rules. And if the Palestinian escalation exists, it's not because we're irrational, it's because we were designed out of the conversation and then punished for trying to re-enter it by force. And you see this happen, like I said earlier, our recurring theme in this entire episode has been our loops. We mm-hmm. see this. Palestinians have been excluded out of their own story time and time and time again. We see this in 1947. We see this in 67. We see this throughout history, that we have been excluded from our own story, from our own narration. Mm-hmm. And you see it happening now.
Oof. Let that sink in, bro. Have I? Phenomenal as always. Applause. Shut up. Gold Shut star. Up. No, genuinely. And it's so true, right? Like, we've mm-hmm. seen it, we've witnessed it. If you don't fit the, like, cookie cutter version of peace that the West and Israel and the Zionist entity wants for you, then you're radical. And it's like, no, Habib, like, that's too much. When you would, like, the liberal Zionists are coming to you and they're like, I want peace, like, let's talk, I think the genocide is horrible, I think the settlements need to be da da da, and they're like against what the world is against, what mm-hmm. the UN and everyone declares as war crimes, and they're like, but, like, we didn't steal Jaffa and Haifa from you, so, like, that's, like, we're always going to have that. That's always going to be Israel.
Right.
And you're like, no, it should be a one state. Everyone should be living there. It's like, whoa. Like, that could never happen. And, even people who say they're on your side, they're like, well, how about, like, you try to work with these liberal Zionists and come to, a middle ground with them, and maybe they can help you out. And it's like, no, that's not what I need. I need what I've been, what my grandparents have been, what my father has been yelling for, the past 76 years. That's what true liberation is for us. This is mm-hmm. what we want. And if you do that, you're radical, you're a terrorist, you're an extremist, you're going to lose your job, you're going to da-da-da. Or you become so defeated. No, Bibi, you're fine. You become so defeated that you, start treading on the thing of normalizing, where it's like, oh, well, maybe I should trust my enemy. And this is why, again, some people might hate me, but this is why defeatism, I have always said, has led to what we see as the PA, what we see as the Oslo Accords. Because without it, without them continuously shutting you down for saying, no, one state, no, one state, we can live together, I promise, da 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 da, without them defeating you down for what, the past 40 years from the Nakba to the Oslo Accords, without them doing that, and anywhere you go too, right? Specifically Palestinians on the ground. They went to Lebanon, they bombed them, and they got the Lebanese people to hate them. Not all, W Lebanon. They went to Jordan, and oh, Palestinians are like gonna ruin Jordan for you. So they were exiled or bombed or killed there. They go to Libya, and so they got defeated. And that's what led to the Oslo Accords. That's what led to the PA. Is it bad in hindsight? Yes, of course. We know what's caused, like what's happening there. But you need to understand that it's either that or radicalization. And you, like, you ate it up. And this is when we talk about Palestinians on the ground. We see people who are saying, in Gaza right now, like, I honestly, like, nuke me, I'm done, like, right. Yeah, I don't living even want to stay in Gaza
death. Living is worse than death.
Yeah, I'll go to Egypt, like, just let me leave. You see that, and that's defeatism. And then you see the other side, and it's like, I'm gonna be here and I will continue fighting and da 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 da.
And it's literally both, like I'm telling you, the repression or the radicalization.
Yeah, and it's both. And it also leads to people in the diaspora, as we have seen, trying to understand, like, what do they really want? Why is this person saying that? Why is... And it's like, Habibi, this is why. Because they have been genocided for the past 18 months. They're either going to be defeated and wanting to leave and never look back, never even say they're Palestinian, or they're going to want to continue fighting. So you, like, that was beautiful, amazing.
I love you. Don't worry, I have another rant coming soon.
So. Girl, because it's so funny that you talked about it, because I was going to talk about, like, the destruction of resistance movements within Palestinians and diaspora and on the ground. So, like, you, mwah, I love you.
So it's, I,
like,
you read my that. Mind.
Yeah. So whenever we talk about resistance, it's always... You know, like, it's always, oh, Hamas, oh, PIJ, oh, this. And that's why, you know me, Hiba, why I always say, like, resistance isn't just you holding a gun and fighting back. But because of our cause and because of everything going on and who controls the media, whenever you say, I am resisting as a Palestinian, their first instance is, or instinct is, oh, this is a Hamas supporter, which I'm going to be quiet, which is like, you know, or, you know, oh, they're a terrorist, they're this. And this,
girl,
is why.
Let
me be quiet. But yeah, like, when you say, I am resisting as a Palestinian, it automatically, in the allies' mind, in the West's mind, in the enemy's mind, it's resistance fighter, Hamas, kill them, sorry. But yeah, so, like, the destruction of resistance movements. And this is why I'll talk about that later. But whenever you're like, I am resisting as a Palestinian in diaspora, to, you know, allies' mind, to the West, to, like, people who don't know much about Palestine, it automatically gets understood as, you are Hamas, or you support Hamas, or you support PIJ, or whatever else it is. And to them, that's a big no-no. That's terrorism. That's no, absurd shoe. And this is why I always make it, like, a point to say resistance isn't just grabbing a gun and fighting on the ground. Resistance comes in so many ways, whether it's you saying, I'm Palestinian. That's you resisting the erasure that the Zionist entity have tried to place on us for 76 years. That is part of the resistance. You having children is part of the resistance. You are creating more Palestinians, and they don't want that. You teaching your children, you talking about Palestine, you wearing a Palestinian shirt, you going to a protest, you doing a podcast, whatever else it is, all of this is under the umbrella of resistance for Palestinians. And it gets demonized. Whenever you say the word resist or resistance, it's always demonized. And it is because how the system has engineered the word resist for Palestinians. If a Palestinian in the West Bank is walking through their checkpoints and this IDF soldier continues to like harass them for hours and hours on end with the gun facing them, and they finally say, you know, enough is enough, I'm done. It's always, oh, this dude resisted, so we have the right to kill him. And this is what we see, not just like the destruction of our resistance movements like Hamas. We've seen it. They have assassinated the top leaders. They try to destruct it from like the bottom up as well. Even prior, every single time we've had a quote-unquote leader, they have either been assassinated or exiled. So we know the destruction of the resistance the resistance groups have always been a thing for Israel since day one. Even though another resistance group will come into their place, probably even fiercer. Nonviolent protest is always like either silenced or suppressed or met with fire. If you're on the ground, the Great March of Return, the UN even talked about it, how it was a very peaceful thing. The Palestinians in Gaza were marching to end the blockade, yet on day one, day two, they were gunning them down and killing them, where they were not a threat to the IDF. In America, if you're in America or Europe or the Western countries, when you go to protest, you're probably wearing a face mask or a hatta kofia, hiding your face, because what if my job sees me and I get fired from this, fired from my job for advocating for Palestine, and you are then tangled with the resistance fighters on the ground. Youth organizations, whether it's in America, in the West, or in the West Bank, they are surveilled, they are infiltrated, they are criminalized. Always. We have the SJP here, specifically in America, that, you know, they have been branded as a terrorist group. They either lose their college or are not able to continue with their education, or they are just harassed for ends on end. We have the BDS movement that's been banned or restricted in multiple states and countries. It's the criminalization of Palestinian advocacy. That's just, you know, and it plays a toll of there's no acceptable way to resist. So this is how it leads into your defeatism, your advocacy fatigue. There's no acceptable way to resist. You're not allowed to do anything. So just sit and let them win. That's what it leads to psychologically. Or it creates a helplessness where it's, you know, I'm not holding a gun. I tried to compromise and they don't care. They're not listening to us. Or it leads to, you know, all resistance, whether you're saying you're Palestinian or whether you're on a protest or whether you're fighting on the ground, all resistance is terrorism. And this forces people to either become silent or in despair, believing they can never do it the quote unquote right way. You're always going to be either too much or too little, depending on who is watching you. And as an advocate in America, it's always too much. Always. You posting a thing about a genocide, oh, it's either going to be deleted off of Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, because they're suppressing it, or other people, right, like even within your family telling you, hey, you might want to cool down, especially with everything happening. I know, I see it too, but cool down. So you can't even post on your own social media, having free freedom of speech and everything in America, you can't even do that without being too much. You can't even ask for sanctions on the settlers without being too much. You can't even ask your colleges or universities here to divest, because it is always going to be too much. And if you're not doing that, for people who are advocating, sometimes they think you're not doing too much. Are you boycotting everything? Are you are you posting every day? Why aren't you talking today? You are eating? Oh, sounds good, but like Gaza doesn't eat. So you're stuck in the middle always. It's either you are way too much for the West and you're not fitting in their cookie cutter plan that they have for Zionism, or you're doing way too little by your own people. And yeah, I also wanted to talk about like the dystopia of watching people inside of Gaza on social media. They had to like learn English, right, to portray their stories on social media. On TikTok specifically, they are like they go and search the analytics and see what is trending and they do it. They learn these trends, the anxiety song, the anxiety trend specifically. Like I scroll and then I see these Palestinians in Gaza doing that trend to push their videos and show people what they are going through. And then here, right, as a Palestinian in diaspora, I'm watching and I feel defeated because there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people. I personally cannot go and fund or donate to every single one of these people. The least I can do is like, share, and comment to boost the algorithm. And it's so dystopian seeing Palestinians in Gaza doing this. And then on the other end, I can't do enough. I can't donate to every single Gazan I see. I can't repost every single video I see. I can't repost videos I haven't seen. And it's like, are you doing enough? Are you not? And it's the constant thing with social media, whether you're not doing too much or you're doing too much. And it just pushes you into the psychological thing where it's like, you're either not doing too much or you're doing too much. You need to cool it down. And there's no in between. You're either, exactly like what Hiba said, you're either too radical or you are fully defeated and it's a punishment to you. Yeah.
Okay. Girl, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. I felt flustered. Yeah.
Well, oh my God. I freaking, girl, I swear to God, I was literally like, mm-hmming, like the entire time. I was like, adding things and I'm like, oh, maybe she can't hear me or whatever because you kept talking over me. And I was like, oh, it's okay, like she's cooking, I'm gonna let her cook. But I think I accidentally like muted myself. So
one, oh my God,
you absolutely, like that analysis that you gave was so first of all, like, unique. I love the fact that you brought in the resistance and kind of talked about like maybe like the psychological like beginnings of what resistance is, and like the how it's not like really something like, oh, we wake up one day and we're like, we want to like do X, Y, and Z to the community. It's like, no, we're frustrated and we have no other option. Like, you did such an amazing job outlining that. Wallah.
Love you,
so
Hiba.
Like, pink star for you. Okay, but I also wanted to include like one or two things I wanted to add. Like, okay, so like the part where you were talking about how it affects your daily life, right? And you were talking about specifically like, oh, your family or like, you know, because I've showed you texts from my family saying like, hey, like maybe, you know, happy
tone it down.
But like focus on, you know, like, and you know, whatever. And like focus on your future, da 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 da. And I'm like, I don't know, for me and the way that I've come to acknowledge, like I don't know how to say this without it being like too like so emotional, but the girl or the person that I was before October 7th, I don't think I'll ever be her again, right?
Oh,
I think
you grabbed a knife and like put it through my heart, because I know exactly.
I don't think and I don't think I'm unique in this, and I think a lot of people have, but I feel like a lot of people are also not feeling this. But I think that I will never go back to what I was, what I liked, what my dreams were, who I was as a person, how I thought about things, how I thought about Taylor Swift, like how I do laundry, like everything. Thing about
eating
me
feeling guilty.
Yeah, it's not even to the smallest things, like literally like how I do laundry or like I feel like I was like literally restructured, right? Like I don't think I'll ever go back to who I was before October 7th. And I've made, like, I, you know how easy it is, like, I'm gonna be like a little personal, but like, you know how easy it is for me to be like emotionally maybe manipulated or like stay in bad situations, and I usually don't put boundaries up, but I've made one boundary, and it's that anybody who's still the same from who, if I knew them before October 7th, and if they're still the same, I don't want to know them anymore. I've cut them out of my life, because anyone who sees what's going on and is still the same person is not somebody I want in my life, in my circle. And it just, I think that, and I don't know, and
I don't know how to explain this. Like December 2023 or January 2024, and we were like, you know, me and you, we, our trauma, we like deal with it with dark humor, or we're laughing about dumb crap. And I was like, we were talking about Instagram, and one of our other friends was like, oh, I posted a thing on Instagram, go like it. And me and I won't ever forget this, me and you both at the same time, you're posting on Instagram while there's a genocide, and everyone started laughing. But it's like, you know, it's like, I can't even, like, you same, like, I haven't seen you post on Instagram, like, forget the stories.
Yeah. But
like, I can't even I don't even have it in me to go and make a post that's not related to Palestine.
Right.
You know
what I
mean?
It's not like a dump with me at a Palestine protest. That's not like, that's not like I've been trying to do these things, you know, like the things where you like go about your everyday and you post what you're doing in your everyday, just for like my little Finsta. And if I'm not including Palestine in it, I don't, and it's not even just for the people, it's not even for like the Palestinians in Gaza, it's for me.
For you.
I don't feel right, right? And I think, and maybe this is more of us having that survival skill, or maybe us being like, maybe projecting, but I genuinely don't know how I'm going to, I don't know how to explain it other than like I just said, that I don't think I'll ever go back to the person who I was before. Everything about me, Petra, everything about me, the way that I think, the way that I breathe, the way that I analyze or walk or listen to Taylor Swift, like I said, or like do my little cute little Lego sets, or shop, or drink Red Bull, or like everything has changed about me. There's like, I only remember, I genuinely like you're a mother, right? So I always like read this, and it's like either you have two lives, like before mom, after mom, right? Like before your kids, after your kids. I have before October 7th and after. Right. And I don't know, maybe this is me like making it me. I'm like genuinely, I am not the main character, and anybody who knows me can tell you I'm not sitting here trying to
No, I don't know. I mean, this is what this episode is about. This I feel like the best not sum it up, because obviously continue going, but when the ceasefire happened, like now we know it's phony, right? Everyone was celebrating, like, and alhamdulillah, like the Gazans should be celebrating because they could finally breathe. Sure.
That post that I posted, right?
Yeah, the first thing that you posted, and like the first thing in my head, and I never wanted to say it out loud, because somehow if I said it
it's
out
loud,
it's
not celebration.
Yeah, and
here,
it's like,
I'll find it.
Yeah, please do. For me personally, it was like, because it was in phases, and it's Israel. Like they're not gonna follow through, and I didn't ever want to say it out loud because then it becomes true. So I kept it like hidden within me, just waiting. And I knew, wallah, like, oh my God, Hiba, remember when I called you or texted you that day, and I was like, Hiba, I knew it was gonna be today.
I had a dream,
and I like that I was so anxious about it, because I was like, it's gonna happen during Ramadan, they're not gonna let them celebrate or finish Ramadan bkhair. It's gonna happen where Palestinian kids are probably out like buying the candy and their Eid outfits, and they're not gonna celebrate it. And as soon as they were like, oh, there's bombing at 4 a.m. there, or our time, like early in the morning for them, or it could have been, sorry, the opposite, it's 4 a.m. their time, right before Fajr, I texted Hiba. I was like, Hiba, I knew, I had a dream. And she's just like, Petra, please, like, dirbaraka halek, be careful, like, worry about yourself. I'm like, no, Hiba, I knew, I didn't want to say it out loud, but I knew. And I always had this, like, pessimism. And I feel like that's also rooted in everything, with that, within, right, like, defeatism and stuff.
100%.
It's like you there when something good happens, you're just waiting for the other shoe to fall, you know? Like,
right, it's every single Israel time. So here's the post. I found it.
Yeah, please read it.
I hope cousins will finally be able to mourn their loved ones who passed and the homes they lost. I hope cousins know that Gaza is theirs forever and will be theirs and will be rebuilt even better. I hope cousins know that their resilience has taught everyone to never give up. This is not a victory or a loss, but a sigh of relief. All the ones who died are in a better place and are lucky to be shahada.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the perfect summing
we
it up.
We don't have a, like, when I saw people were fucking celebrating on Mizargato and doing all of that shit, I was disgusted. I felt like throwing up because I'm like, what the fuck did you guys establish? Palestinians in Gaza have every single right to celebrate because they're living. They're here. They are still living. They are still existing. They have every single right to celebrate that fact. But we should be fucking apologizing to every single Palestinian in Gaza.
We did not do enough. We're still not doing enough. And that plays into this.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, like,
how about you? Like, you heard when I was talking about, like, the dystopian world.
Yeah.
I've seen you, right? When we have, like, Gazans, we're trying to fundraise for them on a TikTok panel. And you're messaging me because TikTok isn't letting you, you know, exchange coins or actually upload coins or whatever. And you're like, I can't. Petra.
Because, like, you just spent $1,000 literally in, like, three lives. And you're like, fuck, like I'm taking out of, like, my family's mouths. And it's like, what do you do, right? It's like, you try
they
to
need
figure
it
out
more, right?
Yeah,
like,
right. That's
all. Like, they need it more. I'll figure it out. Like my kids don't need their Capri Sun today. It's fine. And it's like, you push yourself to the limits, but there's so much, like, sending one person $50 a day is not going to help. It's so expensive. They've run out of food now. And it's like, but maybe if I do this, I can make one person's day. And then you still feel like crap because there's 100 others that still need it and you can't help them.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, maybe me even just sitting on a panel will help, right? Maybe me translating will help. And then you know how that gets to us because we have our stories with our journalists and our close friends we talk to every single day who ended up being martyred.
Mm-hmm.
And it fucks with you, and you still feel guilty for crying, and you feel guilty for being affected. It's just so fucked, and it's like not even our fault. Because look at how we've individualized it, Petra, how we feel responsible for the genocide instead of holding the systems in place responsible.
Yeah, and it's because, you know, we're speaking to the system. The system is shutting us down. Our governors, our senators, our representatives, you call, like, right now, if I call mine, it's like voicemail is full, please, like, whatever, right?
Right.
They do not care. And it's like, if I can't place the blame on you because you're not even listening to me because of the defeatism, because of the burnout, you start pushing your anger towards other people or yourself, and that's what causes infighting. You know, you're not all the time, but like a lot of times, it's no one is listening to me, so I'm gonna come here and I'm gonna like demand or like put my anger on you guys, and then y'all are not gonna listen to me. So it's like, well, F you guys too now then, because no one cares, not even you. And then infighting happens, and it feels disorganized, and you have to start from part one. And it just, it's so exhausting. And I just want to make sure, like, people listening, we're not the victims. We're not here to victimize ourselves specifically. This isn't about Petra or Hiba. It's to make other people who may have, like, may feel like this, understand they're not alone. Everyone in the Palestinian movement, whether you're Palestinian, whether you're Christian, Muslim, whatever you are, or an ally, we're witnessing everything every day. Another kid being blown up, and then they also become numbers to us, right? We no longer remember their names and their faces. It's, oh, we've surpassed 51,000. this is a normal thing that's happening, and it's not you, it's not your fault, it's not Hiba's, it's not Petra's fault. It's how the system is rigged to make you feel like this. So you eventually throw your hands up and say, fuck it, you know, I've tried, I've protested, I've called, I've yelled, I've screamed, I've cried, I can't do anything. That's how it's engineered. It's engineered to make you feel like this. And yeah, I feel like Hiba would do this section more justice than I will, because she words it beautifully. How do we break it? How do you break the cycle? Mm-hmm. What are some things we can do? Should we walk away? Because, you know, we like force ourselves when we're giving birth, and it's like, right. I at least have anesthesia, might as well look at these videos. Can we walk away for a week or so and then come back? What should we do?
Okay, Tia, so like, I just want to talk a little bit before I like kind of answer your question, Petra, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are moments when like you sit down and you realize that you're not just tired, that like you're chemically changed, right? For me, like my memory, my attention, my patience, it's all warped by how much I've had to witness, right? How many times I've had to narrate the same death in a new, like in new words, to either make it poetic or stoic or less emotional, or you know, paint it with these all these beautiful colors in order, you know, to keep people listening, and how it gets harder to tell whether I'm processing the grief or I'm just becoming fluent in this breakdown that I'm having, right? But like, mm-hmm. Someone would think it's emotional, right? But it's not. It's genuinely like neurological, it's sensory, and it's material, right? It's the way mm-hmm. my body digests food, it's the way that light registers through my eyes, it's the delay between thought and speech, and it's in my reflexes, bro, it's my concentration. I'm genuinely cognitively altered, and I'm chemically different, right? Mm-hmm. It dismantled everything. This genocide has dismantled everything about how I exist, right?
Yeah.
Like every action I'm taking, it feels posthumous. It feels like I'm doing it post death, right? It like I'm watching myself do these things, right? And it's not depression, it's not burnout. I'm this is what happens when the world teaches you that, you know, 60,000 confirmed, however, projected nearly, 600,000 deaths, mm-hmm. etc. This is what happens when the world teaches you that, like, in real time, across 600,000 bodies, dead bodies, that we were never meant to be listened to, that we could scream in perfect audio 4K quality and still be ignored, and that every frame of the genocide can circulate on loop and it still be denied, right? And that now that knowledge is genuinely like ingrained in my tissues, like in the tissues of my body, right? I don't trust language anymore. I don't trust people who ask questions that we've already answered. I don't trust my own reactions to what I think is kind or beautiful or just, right? Because beauty in is what the world uses to keep functioning while we continuously are being killed, right? And I'm sorry, right? Like, I'm not, this isn't about me, right? But it's not about how just one person reacts to a genocide of her own people. It's about how genocide reshapes the collective nervous system of everyone who survives it. Not just in Gaza or Rafah or the West Bank or Haifa, but here in the timelines and in the protests and in our inboxes of our 1,000 message requests of Gazawis, right, begging us for help, and right,
mm-hmm.
it's yeah, not about 100%. What we're grieving. It's the fact that we've been flattened into grief, because that's the only version of us that the world is willing to tolerate. So to answer your question, right, like how we break the cycle, right, like how do you break out of a structure that runs genuinely on our exhaustion, on our narrative and our mourning, right? Do you walk mm-hmm. away? Do you lose the little like platform that we had? Do we force it and become the angry stereotype that, like, you know, that gets dismissed before you even finish a sentence? Oh, look at this T word coming. Or do you collapse quietly, like I think you and I have both been doing, and we become cautionary tales, right? Yeah. Or, you know, maybe sometimes we, you know, people have the privilege of taking a break, and then, you know, we'll see. Hopefully the genocide will wait for us to come back from our break, right? Like, what do you, like, it's, I know I'm asking a bunch of questions, but, like, essentially, like, what do you do when surviving has turned into content? Right, so I'm gonna say that one more time just to let it hit. Like, what do you do when surviving has turned into content? Because that's the cycle, mm-hmm. right, Petra? You speak, you burn out, you disappear, somebody else replaces you, and nothing changes. The system keeps moving, the death count rises, and you're just trying to figure out how to fucking feel human again without becoming disposable, right? Breaking the cycle, I don't think personally is about healing. I think it's about choosing something that the system can't monetize. It's about slowness and silence and saying no when someone asks you to be the perfect victim, or, you know, refusing to monetize our grief and refusing to become digestible in the eyes of the, you know, the West, I guess, or the audience. I think it means speaking less but doing more, or speaking more but on our terms. I think it maybe means taking people, like, I think it might have been, I think it, blech, sorry, I'm just so flustered. I think it,
no,
maybe it means like taking care of people off of camera, and maybe it means directing attention where it's needed, not where it's performed best or where you get the most likes or clout, right? And right now, I think the best way to end this episode, Petra, is by asking for something real. We're not asking for a share or a like or an essay. We're asking for a contribution to someone whose life is on the line because the truth he tells has made him a target, right? His name is Aziz. He's a journalist. He's a father of four. He's been forced to separate from his family for their protection because he knows what it means to be a Palestinian journalist in this genocide. Because Israel has killed how many, Petra? What is it? At least 147 journalists?
Yeah.
I think more now.
Yeah. 110 fires.
Mm-hmm. At least 147 journalists since October the 7th, right? Because being a truth teller in Gaza means that you are marked. And he's told us, specifically you and I, Petra, directly, clearly, that he does not believe that he will survive this. And, like, he's not being dramatic. And he's not being, like, he understands what this genocide does to those who document it. And what and if that happens, if he is martyred, he wants to know that his children will be cared for, right?
Mm-hmm.
We speak to him every day, and he is humble, kind, and never asks for anything, but we're asking for him. We're going to post his GoFundMe link in the show notes. We're going to post it on our, like, TikToks and websites. Don't just share it. Don't just feel bad. Act. Because this is what breaking the cycle looks like right now. Not in theory, but in money. It's in survival. And it's in protecting the people who speak when the world prefers silence. This isn't where the story ends, but it's where we stop letting the machine write off our disappearance. Not this time. Not him. Not us, and not like that.
Oh man, you almost made me cry. I just wanted to talk just a little bit more about Aziz. Starting
advocating on TikTok, right? Like, I've always advocated for Palestine, but specifically on TikTok. I've always, they were just numbers to me, even as a Palestinian. I didn't know anyone who lived in Gaza. My dad would tell me, oh, we have distant family. My husband would say the same, but I didn't know their names, never had conversations. So it was easier somehow to advocate without having that personal thing, right? I didn't know anyone in Gaza. From TikTok, Aziz was the first person we both have met, right? During the genocide. He came up, he had this beautiful little girl. Her name is Huda. Oh my God, I don't want to cry. But he came up and he was like, we didn't know who he was. And we started talking to him in English. And he's like, no, أنا بغزة. I'm from Gaza. And he turned on his camera and we see this little girl. And we're like, oh, she's so beautiful. We're talking to them. We're having conversations. And I'm like, oh, that's your daughter. MashaAllah, Allah yahmiha. May Allah, you know, protect her. And he's like, no. That's not my daughter. Her mom was killed, was a martyr during an Israeli airstrike. Her dad is in the ICU. He is in a coma. His body is completely destroyed. She has no one. So I took her and I was like, huh? And he's like, yeah, I'm a journalist. She was, you know, running around in the hospital looking for her dad. She stays with me. I take care of her. And the selflessness from them. And this is like, it's not unique to Aziz, but I've spoken, I know Aziz, I talk to him daily, so does Hiba. The selflessness of it. And
started the journalists coming on TikTok.
Yep. It was Hiba's live. And we just sat and talked because we haven't been able to talk. And we talked about the genocide, we talked about the war, but we also talked about his favorite food, her favorite food. I was pregnant, she named my baby. And he was like, oh, you have to do it now. And it was jokes and it was fun and it was despair and it was, oh my goodness, I have built an actual relationship. We have built an actual relationship. And it was despair every day waking up, messaging him, hey, what's up? Are you okay? Right? Trying to not make him feel like you know, he owes you anything or to get him scared, but just to make sure he's okay. And if you haven't heard from him, oh my gosh, he's not on TikTok. Where is he? You automatically are going crazy. He is one of the most selfless person I have ever met. 100%. Yeah, he's just an amazing human being. He's funny. He's kind. He's crashed out. He's yelled. He's human. And
he's made us laugh. He's made Khalili jokes with us.
Oh my God, Habib Aziz. And that was like the bridge that I don't know about Hiba, but I needed for me to take it one step further. And yeah, so if you are able to, please. He just wants to rebuild. He wants to make sure that hopefully this ends. He can rebuild because his home got bombed. His mother's house got bombed. His kids, he doesn't even know about them, by the way, to keep them safe. So he just wants to rebuild. And he said, if I can't rebuild, at least my kids have money to be able to survive after this. So please share it out everywhere. We're going to keep it in the donations link. We're going to post it on every single episode until he meets his goal. If you have advocacy fatigue or you can't go to a protest, you can't do da-da-da because of your job, because of deportation, because of whatever, the least we can do is make sure one person and one family is going to be okay. So this is my cry for help. Like, that's all. Sorry. That was a bit
don't apologize.
Ranty.
It's needed. It's needed. Yeah. People, like, they don't... And I know, like, it's so overplayed, like, humanize Gaza, right? Or humanize these people, because like at the end of the day, even our own people don't like fail to humanize them. They don't they call them the requests, or they call them the people. Like, they don't even like put, yeah, like I said,
He is one of the most deserving people of life and happiness, of fatherhood, that I've seen. So please do what you can. I don't know.
I hate talking about Huda.
I know. I think that, like, so we're at the end of the episode. I think if you need to go Hulk mode, whoever's listening to this and you resonated with what we said, you felt it. I think if you need to go Hulk mode, go Hulk mode. I think if you need to disassociate. If you need to be cold, go cold. If you need to rage, rage. And if you need to hibernate or vanish or deactivate, do it, right? But know this, you are not malfunctioning. You're not overreacting. You're responding like a body responds to trauma, like a nervous system responds to horror, and how a soul responds to genocide. It couldn't stop and couldn't scroll past, right? This isn't burnout, it's impact. And if the only thing you can do today is send a dollar to someone who's being hunted for telling the truth, that's not a small thing. It's a brick in the wall that we're building against oblivion, essentially, oblivion. And if you need to vanish, fine, but don't vanish alone. Don't forget that others are watching the same nightmare and wondering if they're the only ones falling apart. You're not. We're in this moment together, fractured. We're numb and angry, and we're awake. This isn't a call, you know, for like unity or like therapy or like, I'm not doing this like Vogue self-help blog. This is a call for interruption, right? Mm-hmm. It's a call to break the pattern, to redirect the energy, to protect what we still can, to refuse to let this end the way they want it to end. Not with silence, not with burnout, not with martyrdom by algorithm, with action right now. We're going to post the GoFundMe link. That's the ask. That's the refusal. And it's how we break the cycle today. Not all of it, and not forever, but just today, on purpose, together. Not like that, guys. Not like that.
Very, very well said. I always W Hiba. I know this was like a tough topic. It was kind of like Petra. I might have crashed out a lot.
You ate.
I love you.
This is necessary. We need. I to think have these it is conversations.
Yeah, and like within our circle, within our people, I've heard this, right? Like I'm only one person. I can't. I protest. I do. Da, 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 there's nothing, and we need to make sure that taking that mental break, you're not a bad person for doing it. Take that mental break, regroup, and come back. Palestine is still not free. Palestine is still not liberated. Gaza is still burning. We've got this, you guys. If they are able to be genocided and still wake up every morning saying, "Hi, this is Bisan, I'm still alive," we can get over the hump of, you know, everything going that on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. We're reacting to the system and how it was built. That's it.
Yeah, couldn't have said it any better myself. So we've officially reached the end of the episode for Palestine Exists, which means we will be commemorating yet another martyr. I want to remind everyone that Humanize Gaza is now a newsletter. We have the website. Please go check it out. You can, you know, subscribe to it where whenever we post. I haven't posted in a while, I'm not going to lie. It's part of like my defeatism, because who actually cares? Who is actually reading all of this? Da, 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 da. But this, I need to like get back to it. So hopefully starting tomorrow or this weekend, I'm going to get back to it, because, you know, who cares if one person reads it? that person isn't, that martyr isn't going to be just another number. They're going to be remembered, hopefully. So please make sure to go and subscribe and check it out. We're still working on the website, so it might be a little, you know, not fully there, but we've already posted a couple of stories there. We're going to link the Palestine Exists website with Humanize Gaza. We're just doing a bunch of things in the background, so stay tuned.
Okay, so sorry, Petra, I'm just going to cut in real quick. I just want to say that essentially, so for anyone listening, if you need to contact us, whether it's to send a story that isn't being told or suggest a topic, correct something we missed, or, you know, scream into the void, or send love or hate mail because you've lost your mind like the rest of us, or to give us feedback, whatever the case may be, you can reach us at contact@palestineexists.org. Again, that's contact@palestineexists.org. And we will read it, we'll carry it, and if we'll respond.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe if anybody would like to contact us that way.
Please do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're listening, we're here, we're always available. But yeah. Sorry, Petra, for cutting in. I just wanted to include
that
because I feel like we forgot about mentioning this for like
we did. All the episodes. We actually did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead.
We did.
Duda. Sorry, Habibta.
No, no problem. But yeah, so like Humanize Gaza is a project to make sure our people in Palestine, or I kind of want to change that, our people fighting for Palestine, whether it's the West Bank Palestine, Gaza Palestine, our people in Lebanon, or our people in Yemen who have been martyred for the cause are never forgotten. Like I said, you can always find more stories in the newsletter, on the website, and we're going to link, you know, the Quora page, TikTok page, whatever else on the website. So stay tuned. I promise it's just a work in progress. But today's martyr, since we did talk about the ceasefire, I'm going to remind everyone the story and the name of Zakaria Hamed Yahya Barbakh. Sorry if I butchered that. He was martyred on January 20th of 2025, and he was only 15 years old. So on the second day of the ceasefire, Zakaria was walking around near Al-Awda Square in central Rafah. He was finally breathing after 15 months of genocide. Zakaria survived the equivalence of 4 atomic bombs dropping onto Gaza in the course of 15 months. Yeah. But he survived. Zakaria was finally able to eat. Zakaria was finally able to drink clean water. Zakaria was finally able to meet his older brother in Rafah. Unfortunately, his celebration was cut way too short when the Zionist entity began shooting them down during the quote-unquote ceasefire. Zakaria was killed instantly. His brother tried to run to help him, but the Zionist entity shot at everyone who would get close. Another child that we were unable to name was injured while attempting to retrieve Zakaria's body, and another Palestinian was also killed. Zakaria survived the genocide and was murdered on the second day of the ceasefire. Zakaria survived 4 atomic bombs to almost meet his brother and then get shot at by the Zionist entity. If you search his name, trigger warning, very, very graphic, but they have videotaped his assassination, his murder, his whatever you want to call it. It's there. You can see the people running, trying to help, but then they're getting shot out. So they either duck or run away. And unfortunately, I tried to dig for the Palestinian child who was injured and the other Palestinian who was killed helping him. I couldn't find their names or their stories, so I apologize. But yeah, I feel like this ties into defeatism, and you're finally getting that glimpse of hope and right. That light at the end, and it's swept away from you. So please don't forget everyone who's fighting for Palestine, whether they're in Palestine, Lebanon, or Yemen, their stories matter. They're not numbers. And the least we can do is always commemorate them and at least state one name with the story. So yeah.
We hope you stayed to listen. Thank you guys for listening. Genuinely, thank you guys. We love you. Well, I mean, we like you.
Sometimes. I love you guys.
I love you, Petra. I don't know about loving everybody. I don't know. I'm protecting.
Unless if it's like a Zionist.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Or like, what if it's like a fake? I don't know. What if it's a bad person who just supports Palestine? Like, come on.
Oh, you know? Like that. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So, like, I'm a reserve. My love is, like, sacred, and I gatekeep my love. So, I love you, Petra. But, like, I like you, everybody Hibba. Who listens. But you're not alone. There's people who do love you. It's just not me. But. Fuck. Okay, that's it. Cut.
I know.
Bye, everyone. See you next week.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.